Welcome back to the deep dive. So today we've got a really fascinating stack of source material.
All focused on one thing, really.
Exactly. Content strategy, but specifically communication clarity. We're doing a deep dive into this concept of the practical persona.
Right.
Which is, I mean, it's essentially a tactical shortcut to make sure everything you create, everything you write or publish actually hits its target.
And that's a key point because we often hear the word persona. And, you know, we immediately think of some huge theoretical marketing document that just sits on a shelf.
Right. Yeah. Something nobody ever uses.
But the methodology laid out in these sources, it's incredibly structured. It's highly prescriptive about the end goal, which is generating one or two, you know, really focused guides that just simplify your job.
So it's not about abstract character creation.
Not at all. It's about making sure your content, whether it's a blog post, a presentation, or, well, one of our deep dives, is just undeniably relevant.
Okay, let's unpack this methodology then. The mission seems pretty simple. We are extracting the specific roadmap for creating what the one or two useful personas you actually need.
Exactly.
And the sources promise that this hyper-focus immediately simplifies three things for you, the listener: your opening hooks, your examples, and your calls to action.
It's all about removing the clutter.
Yeah.
The core objective is laid out right up front. The final result has to be one to two personas defined by a very specific set of characteristics.
Mm-hmm.
And if you know that the goal is a singular tool for clarity, it just immediately reduces that feeling of information overload that so often comes with these exercises.
So we're focused on precision.
Total precision.
So if we're building this practical persona as a tool, what are the non-negotiable building blocks? Let's dive into the four core categories that the source material says you must define.
These four categories are designed to move you past just demographics, you know, age and location, and right into the drivers of action. They're the pillars.
Okay, so the first one is foundational. It's about establishing an anchor, fictitious name plus context. Why is that anchoring so crucial? I mean, why can't we just say our audience is busy professionals?
Because busy professional is frankly meaningless.
Yeah.
It doesn't trigger the empathy or the focus you need to write clear content.
Ah, okay.
You need to be able to picture Anna, the recently promoted non-technical product manager who needs to present complex data to the C-suite next week.
Right. That's a person.
That context automatically informs the jargon you use, the examples you choose, and, you know, the urgency of your delivery. If you can't picture them, you will write content that drifts.
That makes perfect sense. It stops you from writing for a faceless crowd. Okay, so the second category is where the strategy gets really powerful and a bit emotional. Need pain plus desired gain.
Mm-hmm.
The sources, being really specific, use the Italian Bisogno pain plus gain desiderato.
And let's spend a moment on that phrase because that distinction, it really matters. Bisogno is often translated as need, but it carries this powerful weight. It's a foundational need, not just some minor preference.
So this duality, the pain point, linked directly to what they want to achieve, that's the engine of the content.
That's the entire engine, exactly. If you define the pain clearly, let's say, I am drowning in conflicting research and don't know which data to trust.
Okay.
The desired gain is that immediate life-changing relief, a single synthesized framework that confidently guides my next decision. If you can articulate that bisogno, your opening hook basically writes itself.
Because you're speaking directly to their deepest professional ache.
Precisely.
That's a powerful takeaway right there.
Okay.
Moving on. The third category covers the environment. Usual platforms or piattaforme abitudinari. Where does this person habitually consume content?
And context matters so much for delivery. We all ignore platform constraints.
How so?
Well, if you're, let's stick with Anna. If she primarily gets content through short asynchronous video briefings on some secure internal portal, your content has to be instantly digestible.
Heavily visual, super fast paced.
Right. But if she's subscribing to long form email newsletters and reads them on her commute, then she's prepared for complexity, for depth, knowing the platform dictates the pace, the length, the medium you have to deliver in.
And finally, the fourth critical element, which I think is the one that's most easily overlooked. What is considered value or cosa considera valor?
Oh, this one is huge.
We tend to assume value just means this information is interesting, but the source is really insistent that the definition of success has to come from the audience's point of view.
Yes. And we need to analyze why this whole structure is so essential. The entire exercise of creating these four components, especially linking that pain gain to the definition of value, it's a tool. It's a tool to avoid the biggest trap.
Which is?
Writing content you think is interesting versus content they find useful.
Got
for someone trying to synthesize dense information, value isn't some long philosophical explanation. Value is, I got three specific memorable facts I can use in a high-stakes meeting tomorrow.
And that definition dictates everything.
It dictates all of your priorities.
I see. So these four building blocks, name, context, pain, gain, platform, and value, they act as the foundation for the next stage, which is actually building out the template.
That's right.
Which brings us perfectly into our second section, the specific 6-point checklist the sources give for creating these personas efficiently.
And this template ensures you move past the broad concepts and you zero in on the actionable details, a very rapid-fire way to validate your persona.
So the first step, again, grounds the persona. Name, role, context. Let's use a specific example now to make this real.
Good idea.
We'll call our persona Mark. So Mark is a freelance software developer. He specializes in legacy systems, and he's always worried about becoming obsolete. That context right there gives us instant direction.
Okay, now we move to that essential duality, but broken out into two specific fields in the template. Problem, problema, and desire, desiderio.
Right.
So for Mark, the problem isn't just legacy systems are old. That's too vague. It needs to be precise.
So something like,
I spend 40% of my time manually patching dependencies, and I am losing bid opportunities because I can't credibly offer modern solutions.
Okay, that's specific. That's a real pain. And the desire, then, is the aspirational outcome.
Exactly. The ability to seamlessly integrate modern cloud services into my legacy offerings, winning bigger contracts.
The problem is the pain. The desire is the ultimate reward. But the source material throws a really crucial element in right here that separates this from, you know, standard marketing stuff. Value for me. Valor per me.
Yes.
Why is that definition of immediate value so critical to separate from the big aspirational desire?
This is, I think, perhaps the most important distinction in the entire method. The desire is the long-term goal, winning the contract, getting the promotion. But the value is the immediate metric by which they judge the single piece of content you're consuming right now.
So if Mark's desire is to win bigger contracts, what's his immediate value?
His immediate value is clarity and speed. If we were making a deep dive for Mark, the value might be a 10-minute explanation that gives me a 3-step checklist for pitching a cloud migration to my C-suite clients.
I see. It's the tool, not the outcome.
It's the tool. If you fail to define this immediate value, your content might contain fascinating trivia about legacy systems, but Mark will see it as a waste of time because it didn't give him what he needed right now.
That reframes everything. You aren't selling the desire. You're selling the immediate value that gets them a step closer to it. I remember when I first started writing hooks, I was always trying to be broad and, you know, hit that ultimate goal. It felt impossible.
Impossible.
This gives you a narrow, achievable target.
Precisely. And if Mark values speed, the content has to be structured for quick scanning with bolded takeaways. If he values thoroughness, you structure it differently. This is how you avoid trying to satisfy everyone and instead succeed by satisfying one very specific person.
Okay, so we've defined the internal drivers, the pain, the desire, the value. Now let's talk about the external world that influences them. That brings us to the distribution and influence factors in the rest of the template.
Yes, the behavioral analysis. This is where it connects to the real world.
We have where they find me, dove mi trova. Now this feels slightly different from usual platforms. This is asking where they discover your content specifically. Why does that matter?
Because the channel sets the psychological expectation for effort.
What do you mean?
If Mark finds your content through a casual link shared in a developer chat forum, he expects it to be instantly relevant, probably informal and quick, maybe a 7-minute audio clip. But if he is actively searching for you on a professional network like LinkedIn, he's in research mode. He's ready for a slightly more formal, detailed offering. It influences everything from your intro style to how you format a transcript.
That's a deep level of tailoring. And the final piece of the template, which I think is just a goldmine for tone and style, creators they follow. Creators
follow. Yeah, this gives you so much insight into their standards and expectations.
Right. Tone, pace, depth.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, knowing which creators they follow tells you who they already trust and what style they're used to.
So if Mark follows, I don't know, super fast, highly visual explainer channels that use a lot of humor.
Your content needs to be dynamic and witty. But if he follows very calm, authoritative, narrative deep dives, that sets a completely different expectation for tone. You know exactly what bar you need to clear to gain their trust.
Okay, but I have to ask, and I'm sure some listeners are thinking this too.
Go on.
Doesn't focusing so tightly on one person, on Mark, doesn't that mean we risk just completely missing a huge part of our audience? People who also care about legacy systems, but maybe aren't freelancers.
That is the big question, and it's a great one. It's also, I think, the most counterintuitive insight of this whole methodology. The source material argues that trying to write content for everyone results in content that's vague, jargon-filled, and ultimately useful to no one.
So by being specific, you're actually being more universal.
In a way, yes. By focusing intensely on Mark's specific bisogno and his specific definition of velour, you force a clarity, a precision, and you find relevant examples that still resonate with 80% of your broader audience. Great communication feels specific, even when it's consumed by many.
I appreciate that defense of the method. This whole process sounds like a fantastic way to break through writer's block, which brings us to the immediate practical application the sources prescribe.
And this is the genius of it. It's not just theory. It gives you an immediate test.
The source explicitly directs the user to rewrite the hook of your next episode thinking only of persona A. Let's stick with Mark. Why does just focusing on him revolutionize the clarity of an opening hook?
Because a hook's entire job is to capture the attention of a specific person with a specific problem and promise a specific form of value.
Right.
When you only write for Mark, you eliminate all the wishy-washy language.
So for example, instead of saying, "This episode talks about general strategies for improving old computer code,"
you can say, "If you're Mark the freelance developer losing bids because you spend too much time manually patching old dependencies, this deep dive promises a three-step checklist for pitching seamless cloud migration to your C-suite clients, guaranteed to win you those bigger contracts."
Wow.
You name the pain. You promise the precise value, the checklist, that leads to the desire, which is winning the contracts.
It makes the pain explicit, which makes the value proposition just undeniable right away. The listener knows instantly if this is relevant to them.
That is the entire synthesis of this deep dive. The focus on creating these one or two practical personas is just a mechanism. It's a mechanism to move past ambiguity and ensure every single piece of content, from hook to CTA, is tailored to solve a known problem for a defined user.
It's a shortcut.
This intense focus is the shortcut to creating clear, high-value communication that actually cuts through the noise.
That was an incredibly structured but also, you know, really conversational breakdown of what can feel like a very nebulous marketing exercise. So a quick summary of the key insights. We learned the four core elements of a practical persona name context, that powerful need pain plus desired gain duality, platforms, and the explicit definition of value. And then we walk through the six-point template for immediate application, which all culminates in that critical practical step of rewriting your next hook for that one person.
And here is a final provocative thought for you to consider as you reflect on this. If the primary goal of creating a persona is to simplify the content's hook, examples, and CTAs, how much clarity are you missing out on when the information you consume hasn't followed this rule?
Ooh, that's interesting.
Next time you listen to a long presentation or read a dense article, try to reverse engineer the persona A they were talking to. If the content feels scattered, if it feels all over the place, perhaps they were trying to talk to 10 different people at once. And it showed.
Food for thought, indeed. That's all for this deep dive. We'll catch you next time.